Hello and welcome to this week's Ukraine Calling program. I'm Tanya Bednarczyk for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. We'll have a roundup of the weekly news for you, some culture and some music. We're bringing you a feature interview of Bohdan Nahailo speaking to Brian Bonner, editor-in-chief of the Kyiv Post, who always has a fresh take on the latest developments in Ukraine. But first, as always, the news. It's been a busy week for Ukraine's anti-corruption activists and authorities. Ukraine's former head of the state agency for investments and national projects, Vladislav Kaskiv, was extradited back to Ukraine from Panama. He stands accused of having embezzled the equivalent of $1 million in budgetary funds in 2012. Kaskiv had headed the state investment agency between 2010 and 2014, during the Yanukovych government. He arrived back in Ukraine on November 1st and was present at a court hearing, where he stated that he had already fully compensated for the damage that he had caused the state. Nonetheless, a pretrial investigation is underway, and in the meantime, Kaskiv has surrendered his passport and has been released on bail. Yuri Lutsenko, the prosecutor general, commented that this is the first time that a senior Ukrainian government official has been extradited back to Ukraine to undergo investigation. Also in a resonant high-profile case, the National Anti-Corruption Bureau of Ukraine has arrested Oleksandr Avakov, the son of Ukraine's interior minister, on October 31st, as part of an investigation into embezzlement. He was one of three persons arrested over allegations of embezzling 14 million Ukrainian hryvnias from procurements of backpacks for the Ministry of Internal Affairs. The two other people are former Deputy Minister of Internal Affairs, Serhii Chobotar, and CEO of an IT firm, Volodymyr Litvin. The three suspects were detained on charges of misappropriating state funds, which were meant to buy backpacks for the Ukrainian army in 2014 and 15. Minister Avakov has reacted to the charges, saying that his son is innocent, and Oleksandr Avakov himself stated that the case being made against him is a political one. Some expert observers have commented that this case is unlikely to lead to results due to there being political influence on the judiciary. And others have noted that results would only be possible in these types of investigations if independent anti-corruption courts were created. Ukrainian Prime Minister Volodymyr Groysman reacted by saying that Ukraine is ready to cooperate with investigations in Washington. He said that they hadn't yet received any requests for information in this regard, but Ukraine would readily provide the information that it has. This week, there was another targeted assassination near Kyiv. A Ukrainian Chechen, Amina Okuyeva, who was traveling by car near Kyiv, was killed in an ambush on October 30th. She and her husband, Adam Osmayev, were both Chechen refugees who had fought as volunteers with Ukrainian troops in eastern Ukraine against Russian-backed separatists. Both Osmayev and Okuyeva were well known as critics of Vladimir Putin and Ramzan Kadyrov, leader of the Russian region of Chechnya. They had just survived a previous assassination attempt of them in June. A Russian citizen posing as a French journalist doing an interview shot at Osmayev. Okuyeva shot back and had saved her husband's life. Due to this, Amina Osmayeva was well known in Ukraine as a heroine. Ukrainian authorities have treated the incident as a contract killing and attributed it to Russian special services. The security services have located at least one attacker from the spate of terrorist attacks in Ukraine lately. On the 31st of March, the SBU Colonel Kharabaryusha was killed in an attack in Mariupol from a car bomb. Since the war broke out in the Donbas, the colonel had specialized in locating Russian special ops agents. From video recordings at the site, the SBU have managed to identify Julia Prasolova as the trained agent who placed the bomb. She was trained in operations by the Russian FSB while she lived in Donetsk, but was then detained by Ukrainian security services when she came to Odessa to pick up a new Ukrainian passport. The military tension between the pro-Russian forces and the Ukrainian army somewhat reduced lately, according to the OSCE reports. However, the Ukrainian army still suffered losses. Four servicemen were killed in action and 15 wounded. On October 28th, pro-Russian forces reportedly shelled the residential area of Vodyane Donetsk region with the use of mortars. Civilian homes were damaged, but there were no human casualties. In total, over the month of October, 13 Ukrainian servicemen were killed. Their names are Serhii Klemshev, Andriy Bespalov, Mykola Larin, Mykhailo Luhovy, Oleksandr Omelchuk, Mykola Rudenko, Yuri Kolesnik, Anton Sinyahub, Yaroslav Bondar, Ilya Stetsun, Valery Samofal, Oleksandr Zhukov, Georgi Saralidze. And now for our feature interview. Bohdan Nahailo speaks to Brian Bonner, chief editor of the Kyiv Post, on his commentary on the latest developments in Ukraine.
Today's guest on Ukraine Calling on our feature discussion interview is the long-serving and perhaps long-suffering editor of the Kyiv Post, Brian Bonner. Welcome, Brian.
Happy to be here, Bogdan.
And it's good to have somebody with your broad perspective on things. You cover these things so thoroughly every week. Obviously, a lot has been happening in the last week or two or three, not only in Ukraine, but outside of Ukraine, with implications for Ukraine. The Manafort case, the protests that have been taking place here, and with the demands and the forms of the protests. Yulia Tymoshenko's statements recently on TV, moves against people allegedly involved in corruption, Avakov's son being the most famous incident recently, and of course the various terrorist acts and the killings that have gone on in recent weeks. So let's start with, let me ask you this. Your newspaper is about to come out again. What are you going to put on the first on the front page?
Still coming together, but the front page is Paul Manafort. Despite all the other big news that you named, I think this one has the most impact on Ukraine, the world, especially the United States. I expect there's many lessons to draw from this. You know, Paul Manafort worked for a decade for President Viktor Yanukovych and the Party of Regions, and had a big hand in dressing up Yanukovych, converting him from being a dictator to a Democrat. It worked well enough to get Yanukovych elected in 2010, but then obviously the massive corruption started, and he was ousted during the revolution. Manafort stayed on, the U.S. political consultant, for a year to reformat the leftovers of the Party of Regions into the opposition bloc. And then he went to the real big time, back as campaign manager for Donald Trump's successful U.S. presidential election.
What was his actual role? Do we know? You say he made the monsters look good, right? But this was in terms of techniques, know-how, public relations. What were they paying him for?
Well, I think it's all of those things. And whatever he was doing, it was worth them paying $75 million for.
Or was it lobbying in Washington on that
behalf?
Yes,
I mean, I think it was all this network. The investigation isn't over, and this network is starting to unravel. I suspect the focus is going to shift to the U.S. presidential election and away from Ukraine. But we in Ukraine should draw the lessons here. He was paid a lot of money for this, a lot of it illegally, allegedly, according to the indictment, laundered it through that. And what we're drawing is the study in contrast. And we hope Ukraine's law enforcers see how a real, functioning, independent, professional, competent law enforcement system works. In the United States, Robert Mueller's team had 5 months. They put this together. They have looks like a very convincing indictment, very damning indictment. They've already gotten one guilty plea in the course of this investigation on another matter. But what's key here is the contrast with the ineptness and corruption and the political dependency of Ukraine's law enforcers, who, I remind you, we're accused of being too critical of everything. No, we're critical of everything that is wrong in this country. And one of the things that's wrong is we don't have a effective law enforcement system. Now, look at the Black Ledgers. Now, for the listeners, the Black Ledgers are the chronicle, the handwritten chronicle, allegedly, of $2 billion in illegal secret payments made out of the Party of Regions to various people, including $12.7 million line item for Paul Manafort. Ukrainian law enforcers are skillful at creating ruses and diversions that mean nothing. There's a huge debate over the authenticity of the signatures. It's reminiscent of, if you remember, the Mykola Melnichenko tapes of 2000.
Yes,
and the debate was over. Yeah, and the tapes, showed hundreds of hours of Leonid Kuchma, ex-president Leonid Kuchma, released in 2000 by his bodyguard, basically running the country like a mafia boss. And they diverted, the law enforcement then obstructed and diverted the debate into whether these tapes are authentic or not. Contrast that with what a real investigator does.
Can I just ask you, in parenthesis, sure, looking back, in two words, what do you think about the Melnichenko tapes now, from hindsight?
Well, this is a lot of what was on the tapes happened in real life. And there was FBI analysis of portions of Kolchak tape, the radar that was illegally sold to Iraq, that And the FBI found the tapes authentic. But I tell you, a lot of these things are diversionary. What Mueller's team did was take the Black Ledger and all the other available evidence, get court-approved search warrants, get bank records, get tax records, and put together the case that this income was derived at illegally. It was laundered through massive shells, and there was no tax paid on it. That is what investigators do. And in contrast, now, Paul Manafort doesn't face any charges in Ukraine, and he stole this from Ukraine. This is Ukrainian money that we're talking about. No charges. And the response since the indictment in the U.S. is very sleepy, like, yeah, okay, well, this is all very interesting. We'll look into it.
Why do you think that is? In a post-Maidan setup with a post-revolution of dignity leadership, supposedly.
The authorities in the last 3 years... And you know this as well as I do, have made no progress in punishing Yanukovych, very little progress in punishing Yanukovych era corruption. I think the reason comes back down to the fact that we don't have independent and competent law enforcement system, and that we're going to argue in the editorial that the actual law enforcement system is so politicized and so incompetent that it actually is put in place to keep in place the insiders. I think effectively, de facto, I'm not saying it was written down anywhere, but it certainly looks like, Poroshenko, who has been obstructing the creation of an independent anti-corruption court, who has been putting loyalist after loyalist in the prosecutor general's office, and who still presides over a police system that is still intrusive and not reformed. I'm talking the Interior Ministry and the Security Service of Ukraine. So there's no will. The fundamental problem is that politicians don't want to give up their control over who goes to jail and who doesn't go to jail. And it does look to me like, you know, there was an informal deal where the nation is at war, that we're not going to go after these things. We need your support in the war. Let's just keep the system going.
So however important and critical the war is, it's used as a diversionary tactic, as a shield by those defending their interests.
It continues to be, and we see this popping out in many different directions. And that, you know, maybe takes us to the protest.
Before we get to the protest, let's look at Nabu going for the son of Avakov, you know, the head of the police system here. That came as a surprise, really, that they went for him, that they dared to do that. And obviously, the response has been fairly predictable and very disappointing from the police institutions.
Oh, yes. And the court, first of all, didn't want to meet because they said they were closed for the day for business. And secondly, they let him go without bail. Now, Nabu, it's a very interesting case. It does look politicized to me in the sense that I think there's something going on. There's a feud going on between Poroshenko and Avakov. And now, as the election rolls out, they're going to dish the dirt on each other. The thing with Nabu is, and, you know, if this tape is true, it's horrendous. I mean, to steal from a nation at war, is a form of traitorship.
So you're indicating that this rift between the president and the head of the police that has been rumored about for months now, that this, in fact, is what lies behind it.
It looks that way to me. And Nabu, I mean, the head of Nabu, if he was here, he would tell you that ultimately their work is meaningless if they don't have an independent court system to take these cases to. And that's been the problem all along. Furthermore, I mean, you know, the listeners should know, Nabu has less than 800 people.
Okay, and listeners should know I'm talking to Brian Bonner, of the editor of the Kyiv Post.
Oh, yes. I mean, the regular institutions that have produced zero convictions for corruption, murder, are staffed 150,000 in the Interior Ministry, 40,000 in the Security Service of Ukraine, 15,000 in the General Prosecutor's Office, and 9,000 judges. So they're not performing the role as an independent judicial system. And let's take a look at Manafort. By official estimates, $40 billion was stolen from the country during the Yanukovych era. Manafort, the allegations against him are $75 million. This is less than 5%, a tiny. So what we have in Ukraine are hundreds of Manaforts, and they're getting off scot-free. They're not being prosecuted, or cases are opened. And then you know the trick. They have a court hearing once every 3 months, and then they postpone it for another 3 months. And then pretty soon where we are with the murder of Georgi Gengadze. And 17 years later, after everybody's lost interest or has moved on, cases are quietly closed. And that's what we're seeing now.
Which is highly disappointing, given that we went through a revolution of dignity in the Maidan, and people were led to believe that things would change. I'm particularly concerned about not so much the delays, but the watering down of the legal reforms with the Supreme Court and other important changes that have been made, that at the last minute there have been changes introduced to the parliament that kind of detract from the significance of the changes, which does not bode well, really, because cosmetically we have a huge overhaul of the legal system, but the realities are that the same people, maybe different now, but the same way that strings were pulled from on top continues.
Yes, that is exactly correct. Those who follow the selection of the new Supreme Court closely say don't expect much. This is not going to be a reformed Supreme Court in the sense of being independent of political influence. And furthermore, we have the Council of Europe's Venice Commission recommendation that Ukraine adopt an anti-corruption court. Why? Because that is what's needed to, you know, we need a public trials by judges who are weighing the evidence, or a jury of the peers that is weighing the evidence and deciding guilt or innocence. The other reason why I want to go back to Nabu and Avakov, okay, it's horrible if he inflated the price of backpacks and ripped off the defense ministry at war, especially him being the son of the top law enforcer in the state. But the other problem with Ukrainian law enforcement is they're doing little fish cases. $6 billion was stolen out of Privat Bank, $6 billion. That's 6% of the nation's GDP. It's a huge percentage of the $40 billion budget. There's no prosecution for bank fraud. There's no...
Was it a behind-the-scenes trade-off?
De facto, it looks that way. Because, you know, can you prove that? No. But the fact is $6 billion. And is anybody even talking about it? And what media outlets are they talking about it? No. Igor Kolomoisky just walked away. Looks like he's going to walk away. He's the man accused of, suspected of it. He was the owner when $6 billion went missing and the state had to take that over. So what we have is, and that's just the financial crimes. I mean, as you know, we have a whole rash of assassinations, bombings, and so forth that are very disturbing and show a very frightening picture. Most frightening of all is when cases don't get solved, because this means that impunity continues and this can happen again and again and again.
Yulia Tymoshenko has come out very strongly. She was quite quiet for a relatively long period, though partly she supported the recent protests and Saakashvili's return, etc. But I noticed on TV recently, in the last week or so, she really went for Poroshenko and his team, and also very bluntly accused of the sort of profit-making from the war at the top levels, something that you're alluding to as well. Do you buy into that, whilst most citizens are very concerned that their sons and daughters are dying out there, and that one needs to keep, a joint front, a common line against the enemy, that this kind of supposed or alleged corruption inside is war profiteering is taking place?
Well,
or is this her simply being populistic?
I don't think it is her. She's, of course, running for president. And so she's going to, and she's a bare knuckles political fighter. So
we should also add that the context in which we are now seeing these things is already the pre-election phase, already
Sure.
the positioning
Sure.
and preparing of the forces.
We have a serious problem with the defense and security budget right now. It's $5 billion. 5% of the GDP gross domestic product of the nation, and it's an entire black hole of secrecy. So that only invites corruption, and we're seeing this is not, you know, with Ivankov, it's not the only scandal that's been dribbling out. Many, many scandals have been and dribbling out. You don't have to take it from people who are out of power. I mean, members of parliament, I interviewed Deputy Speaker Oksana Siriad, and she said you would be astounded by the level of profiteering in the defense and security budget. Now, granted, there are things that need to be secret at war, but also in even in countries at war, there are independent oversights and protections against this kind of corruption, which is intolerable because all the money that Ukrainians spend for their taxes on security and defense should go to the winning the war and should not be siphoned off by insiders who are using the cloak of secrecy to hide the thefts.
And we're in a very strange situation as we gear up for the elections, in effect. We see these rifts within the ruling coalition, though there were attempts to heal them, to bring them together into one bloc, the Poroshenko bloc and the Popular Front. But now that seems to be very problematic. And yet, on the other hand, the large-scale protests that were called for by the democratic opposition, the opposition within the democratic camp, seems to have fizzled out after a few days of capturing attention. Was that because it was poorly prepared? Was it because it was too motley a crew, a conglomerate of forces, with very democratic forces, very populistic forces, etc.? And what does that tell us? Is society, the civil society that we saw as becoming stronger, as becoming empowered, has it now sort of run out of steam to influence the course of developments?
No, I don't think that's the case at all. I mean, all those factors that you talked about, I think, are part of it. The way I see it now is Poroshenko's bloc and the Popular Front, the two largest factions in parliament, have lost so much popularity that they need each other somehow. They have to try to stay together somehow to keep their power through the 2019 elections. But taking personalities out aside, what did the protesters want? They wanted three things. They wanted an anti-corruption court. They wanted an end to parliamentary immunity from criminal prosecution. And they wanted a new election law so that people can't buy their way onto party lists and open party lists, so people can actually have free elections, representative elections, and elect the person that they choose and vote against people that they don't want to choose. I think all Ukrainians, I think everybody who loves Ukraine supports that. So if you take the personalities out, what they stood for there are the aspirations, the democratic aspirations of what Ukrainians had a revolution. You can't live in society and have a perpetual revolution. But I can tell you that, I mean, for every Ukrainian I know, if they don't see progress on rule of law, justice issues, these protests are going to be continuing again and again because people are not getting
more radicalized.
Yes. I mean, they see the obstructions. They're not being fooled. I mean, they're not being fooled by anybody. And it's frustration. You know, I think there's still hope that President Poroshenko will rise to the occasion and become a statesman and selflessly put in what the people have wanted, what civil societies wanted, and what their Western friends want for the future. Otherwise, it's not going to be a stable situation.
Right, and it's going to be a difficult winter. Look, let me ask you to conclude. Again, I'm talking to Brian Bonner, of the editor of the Kyiv Post. Your newspaper is now a flagship of, I'm not going to call it criticism, but standing for these values of the Maidan, of the revolution of dignity, and pointing the finger to where the shortcomings are and pointing the finger high up to where the problems lie. That's a difficult role to play. You've become quite isolated, and yet strategically you're very important because you're the interface with the outside world, with the foreigners that are in this country and outside. People read you. So clearly the authorities are not comfortable with the line you're taking. Are you feeling any kind of pressure, as some of the NGOs pushing for democratization have complained about recently?
Well, we take the editorial positions that we take on the opinion pages, and we have hard-hitting, what we call editorially independent news and commercially independent news, because we love Ukraine. It's a mostly Ukrainian newspaper. We want this nation to be better. We believe this nation will be better. We understand. We live here. We're not going anywhere. We're not moving to Washington, D.C. or Prague or any other place. We're here because we love this place, and we've been with it for revolutions and war now, and seen a lot of corruption, and we want this place to be better. But we are not experiencing the kind of harassment that civil society is. We are actually enjoying good free speech. I think obviously we know from people in power, they are not happy with what we're writing. They're not happy with what we're seeing. But so far, they've countered it, it seems, with paid, you know, assistants and PR people to write their version of the story, which they're entitled to do. And people will decide for themselves what the truth is. So far, we haven't seen it. But Bogdan, you know, the biggest problem with journalism in Ukraine is not repression anymore. Thank God, it's a relatively free society. The biggest problem is financing independent journalism. And I would rate that as the biggest challenge for the Kyiv Post, because, you know, most of the media still belongs to the oligarchs, and there's still no history of editorial independence and so forth.
Well, at least that's a partly optimistic, positive note that we end on, that we are enjoying this freedom of expression, and that your newspaper, the flagship, as I call it, is not being subjected, at least overtly, to any of the harassment that others are. I thank you very much, Brian, for taking part at short notice in our discussion to inform our listeners about what's happening in Ukraine today. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Bogdan.
For those interested in contemporary Ukrainian photography, there are a number of good exhibitions to see this week. A large exhibit on the art of contemporary photography called Photo Kyiv is open for 4 days in Kyiv this week at the Toronto Kyiv Business Center. Art galleries from all over Ukraine have contributed, and there are many recognized photographers participating, as well as up-and-coming names. Street photography, documentary photography, news photography, as well as art photography is being exhibited. And also, the 19th annual photo exhibit of Den newspaper is now on in Kyiv's Lavra Gallery. It's a selection of images from an international competition that aims to breathe some fresh air into the autumn season. Over 200 photos from all over the world will be on display. This year's theme is a synergy of joy and energy. The paper's editor, Larissa Ivshina, says the goal is to provide oxygen to a society at war. This week's song for you is a contemporary musical rendition of a poem by Mike Johansson. He was executed by Stalin in 1937. In 2017, Liza Zharikova put his poem Zeleny Zayez, which means green rabbit, to music. Enjoy.
Ось іду по рейці і хитаюсь, чи дійду до краю, чи впаду. Ліз ліворуч, мов зелений заєць, задивився на мою ходу. Ось іду по рейці і хитаюсь, чи дійду до краю, чи впаду. Ліз ліворуч, мов зелений заєць, задивився на мою ходу. Десь далеко одинокий колник пісню травам і лісам згадав, наче гасне дерев'яний дзвоник, наче спить і падає вода, наче спить і падає вода. Розставало вранці у вікні, скільки птиць летіло над полями, не верталось до мене у вісні, не верталось до мене у вісні.
пориці і хитаюсь. Чи дійду до віку, чи впаду? Ліс спинився, ліс, мов зелений заєць, задивився на мою ходу, задивився на мою ходу, і ось іду пориці і хитаюсь. Чи дійду до віку, чи впаду? Спинився ліс, мов зелений заєць, 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 задивився на мою ходу.
Next week we'll be back with even more news, culture and music. So tune in again for a new edition of Ukraine Calling. We would be happy to receive any feedback from you. You can write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. This is Tanya Bednarczyk in Kyiv. Thanks so much for listening.